Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yeah, there's no, like, we just jump right in here.
Of course.
Is this light over here weird that no one can see who's listening? It just feels like it's casting an immense amount of light on this side, but then...
It's cool. It's like it's artistic. It's Lynchian.
It is?
Sure.
Well, that's how I try to make all my hotel visits Lynchian. I've dragged out... Now, I keep wanting to pronounce your last name the Italian way.
Please do.
Scagliati.
Oh, precious. No one pronounces it that romantically. And it's actually a long O, if I'm going to get nitpicky. Scagliori. But, yes, correct.
That's nice.
The G is silent. That's kind of... That's the catchphrase I'm trying to enact.
The G is silent?
It's actually on the back of the business cards I just had made.
Is that going to be your album cover when you do the album?
Maybe.
When you open for Hole?
When I open for Hole.
You're going to see Hole tonight.
I'm going to see Courtney Love Live!
That's amazing. And well, the great thing about seeing Courtney Love Live is you don't even have to see her play music. She is just entertaining if you just see her live.
Exactly. Well, and that's why I'm going. I'm going for the freak show. I mean, it's 50-50, right? It can either be a really entertaining train wreck,
mm-hmm.
or it can be a terrifying train wreck.
Either way, whatever kind of train wreck it's going to be, it's going to be amazing.
I'm so excited.
I know I told you the story the other night, but there weren't a lot of podcast listeners, but when I... when I worked at the MTV Video Music Awards one year and I saw her rehearse with Hole, she wanted to just start rehearsing, but they hadn't hooked everything up yet. And so they were trying as fast as they could, but she would count off. This was her way of trying to get them to...
Work faster?
Work faster. She'd go, 1, 2, 3, 4, and there wouldn't be any sound.
I am. She's jump high.
She got a little bit of... I think it was... and this guy was
ooh, Violet.
It was Violet.
Oof.
And so she got the first couple notes out and no sound, of course. They were hooking it up. And she goes, 1, 2, 3, fucking 4! And then Eric Erlandson was like, Courtney, they're trying to hook this up. Like, he was very sweet. Like, clearly, he was like an abused wife, you know, almost like he was going, you know, she's really very nice, you guys. And then she turns to him like it's his fault, and she goes, shut up, Eric, you can't even play guitar. It was mind-blowing.
I'm in love.
Yeah, it was mind-blowing.
I'm just waiting for more classic quotes I can tuck into my scrapbook and cherish forever.
I'm sure you saw the Nick Broomfield thing, right? Did you see the Kurt and Courtney documentary?
I haven't.
He basically tries to... My impression of it was that, you know, he kind of tries to imply that she might have been involved in... That it was not a suicide, it was a murder. I mean, like, he basically...
Ooh, touchy.
Just kind of like, well, this wasn't investigated, and this one... But, you know, he goes back and talks to her family and pulls out this timeline that she wrote when she was young.
I know about the timeline. The deadlines for acquiring either a rock and roll husband or becoming
yeah,
a rock
and like the people
star.
That she was going to meet and
having
like,
a swimming pool by a certain
like Oscar nominee, like that kind of craziness.
Sure.
So all I'm saying, people, is if lists can work for Courtney Love,
I call it ambition.
There's a little bit of ambition.
I don't have a timeline necessarily, but I do have a list.
Let's write a book called Skank Ambition and. It's going to be all about...
I can write the introduction for Skank Ambition. I'm writing an introduction pretty soon, actually.
What are you writing it for?
Well, the good people over at Comics on Comics have...
I love those guys.
They mobilized a street team for me. Good old Sax Carr has had t-shirts made. Allison Skagg to play Cassie Hack in the adaptation of Hack Slash.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, by way of this man's benevolence, I've gotten in touch with Tim Seeley.
I know Tim!
Really?
Super nice guy!
Oh my god! Mutual friend jam.
That's fantastic.
And he's asked me to write the intro for my first Maniac. So, I have a couple months to do it, and...
That is fantastic. Yeah.
I'm really excited.
Now, listen, not only are you a very pretty lady, you are also, because I'm 70, but you are crazy smart. Crazy smart.
Thank you.
So I don't know, I'm not familiar with your background before. Oh, by the way, Allison is on Warehouse 13.
It begs mention. yes, yeah, I'm number 4 on the call sheet. I play Claudia Donovan, the... geeky, hip, punk rock techie on the show who hacks her way into the warehouse to kidnap Artie. And, well, you watched season 1 if you listened to the Nerdist podcast, I'm sure.
You probably did.
Which is now available on DVD and Blu-ray. Go to Amazon.com or iTunes or whatever. It's not disappointing. Also, our music was just nominated for an Emmy.
Oh, that's awesome.
Great news. Ed Rogers is a fantastic, fantastic guy and really talented. And we're all exceedingly proud that... The score was nominated.
That's spectacular. Well, I met you when you did G4's Attack of the Show.
Correct, for the second time.
Yes.
Sophomore status.
You did a little sophomore action there. I wasn't there for the first round. So, but the second round, I was like, Sales chicks, all right. And then we became Twitter pals, and then
my account got hacked or something, and I lost all my followers and followees. Is that correct?
Oh, your account got hacked?
Or a virus or something, so I had to restart it. But I'm almost up to 6,000 now. And the fact that 6,000 people want to subscribe to my thoughts on a daily basis is terrifying to me.
It's only going
to
go up from here, Skag. It's only going to go up from here.
Mm-hmm.
Soak it up. Warehouse 13's on Sci-Fi. A lot of people were angry that Sci-Fi changed the name to SYFY. But it makes sense. You can't trademark... SCI-FI.
It's a genre. It's a broad, sweeping genre.
You can't trademark. No, no one got fucking mad when Def Leppard misspelled Def Leppard.
Correct.
I mean, leopards were, you know, incorrectly signing to other Def Leppards after that, how to spell it. But other than that, no one gave a shit. No one gave a shit.
Yeah, the rebranding was cause for a lot of jokage, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that not all the programming on Sci-Fi is science fiction anymore. I mean, like, our show has elements of science fiction, but it's also, more than anything, a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It has the thrills and chills of your run-of-the-mill sci-fi show, but it's also got this great chemistry between our two leads, Annie McClintock and Joanne Kelly. And Sci-Fi did a really, really smart thing by hiring a showrunner who has no interest in sci-fi and is a straight comedy guy.
Mm-hmm.
He believes that Jack Kenny, by the way, I love you, Jack. Thank you for hiring me.
And thank you for listening, Jack.
Jack Kenny believes that, you know, all the best shows are family shows. And I didn't really connect with what a family show we are until we premiered last week. And Eddie and I did this live online chat with apparently like over 700 people logged on to chat with us. And I just threw the question out there at the end, like, how old is everybody? Who are you watching with, you know, loved ones? Who are you alone? Your dog? I don't know. We got everyone from age 11 to 66.
Hmm. That sounds like a board game. Their age is 11 to 66.
Yes.
That's your show.
It is, yeah.
I like that sci-fi, you're right, it's not science fiction anymore, it's science fact. We have proven that a 3-ton piranha can jump out of the ocean and attack a man. So
I did not expect that I'd have to give my opinion on the set of you don't have monster to, movies.
Listen, I have to tell you, I'm a fan of those because, here's why. I used to watch Creature Features when I was a kid.
Sure.
You got so excited when some, like, crappy Creature Feature film would come on.
Yeah.
And it was just part of the fun of it. So I am totally on board. You know, like, they don't have to make fucking, you know, X-Men every Saturday night.
Correct.
You know, just some fun.
No, they can make Sharktopus.
The shark with a pussy?
I don't know what it is.
The shark with an octopus that predicts the soccer championships.
There you go. There's soccer going on right now?
I don't know. Believe me, I don't. The only reason I know is because there's just, you know, clusters of Latino gentlemen around televisions in Los Angeles cheering, and that's the only way that I know that there's soccer.
And lots of jerseys hanging from randomly erected kiosks.
Yeah.
I've found.
Or you see some other country's flag on the antenna of a car that's honking while it's driving around the city. So they're like, well, my team won, I guess I better let everyone know in horn fashion, and then so they just drive around and honk at people.
I have no connection to sports whatever.
I'm sports tarded. I don't understand it. When they try to connect with me in that way, they're like, you see the fucking game today? I'm like,
No, I plugged in this awesome microphone that looks like a lethal weapon.
Oh yeah, that's the Zoom H4n. That's what I start talking about. Oh, I didn't record that on the Zoom H4n. You know, you can actually record in wave formats, but at this point I'm going to record in MP3 128-bit. It's very exciting. Where? Allison, come back! Door slams. So you've been up here in Toronto. We're actually in Toronto.
We are. This is a location Nerdist podcast.
It is a location, yeah. I'm up here performing the festival. You're up here shooting Warehouse 13. Where are you guys in the season?
We are shooting the 11th episode in our 13-episode sequence. We've had to shoot out of order a lot just due to scheduling and, I mean, locations coming available at different times and scripts being ready at different times. So we're shooting the finale, and then we'll shoot number 11, and then we'll shoot our standalone Christmas episode. Yep.
That's awesome.
I'm really excited. It's my understanding I'll be decorating the warehouse.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's Claudia's first time having a Christmas with a family. Yep, exactly. That was...
I promised myself I wouldn't cry.
I mean, you took your cue so perfectly. I think you need to be in the Christmas episode.
I should be in the Christmas episode. Should be in the Christmas episode. Listen, the only way I'm ever going to get on any kind of theatrical show is if someone says, do you want to be on this? I hate auditioning for stuff. I literally just stopped.
Auditioning is inhumane.
How long have you been doing the acting thing?
I knew as a toddler that I wanted to be a performer, even though I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. But my mom caught me doing a Bill Cosby impression for my pool man and realized that an outlet needed to be found for this before the neighbors started whispering.
Now it sounds, I don't want to dig too deeply into that, and I'm just trying to walk on eggshells here, but that sounded like something inappropriate was happening. What are you doing with my daughter? Oh, it was just Bill Cosby.
No, it was probably me going, in the jello pudding, my wife, Camille. So, I don't know. Oh God, I don't even do it anymore. Why did Eddie McClintock's Bill Cosby impression is much better than mine. But, you know, started acting in, you know, school plays and community theater when I was a little kid. And then tried it out professionally in Los Angeles when I was 11. So, I've grown up reading breakdowns and thinking in stereotypes.
Let me just... All right, so that's my friend over there. She's smart, funny, but with an edge.
Correct.
And also devastatingly attractive.
Correct.
I feel like a good storyline for Warehouse 13 is you go on to some covert government website that is hidden with a Bill Cosby video, and something happens, and it fries your brain, and you think you're Bill Cosby for most of the episode. And then you could do your, I was just here in the warehouse, and the building device, and then the other part of it is you don't understand computers, like it because you think you're Bill Cosby,
sure,
and he doesn't understand computers.
He understands pudding.
He sure does. So you always try to bring it back to pudding every time. Well, the computer won't work. Have we tried some pudding?
Worst Bill Cosby impression I've ever heard.
It's really good, actually.
I dig you, Hardwick, but really, really bad.
Well, I guess I could understand that. Oh, wait, I mean, it's just getting worse.
Now it's a cowboy from Dallas all of a sudden.
Yep. Well, not that's all, well, Bill spent Bill some time down south, and you know how you just absorb the accent of wherever you are. Now, you were just doing a very superficial Bill Cosby accent. I was actually delving into some very deep character work with geography.
You went method with it.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
I went really method with a role on a TV show called Mental a while ago, playing a girl who was born a boy and at the top of the episode tries to commit suicide. I'm not going to go mental on something like that. Or rather, I'm not going to go method on something. That was a Freudian slip. I meant to say I'm not going to go method, and I said I'm not going to go mental. So I just revealed that I went seriously mental.
What do you mental. when you're an actor who, you know, you're one of those, you're not one of those people who are like, you have to call me my character name.
No,
you can just turn it on and off.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it depends on the situation. If I've got a scene where I need to get to some deep emotion, I'll have my quiet time in the corner of the set to get myself into whatever place I need to be.
Mm-hmm.
But when a scene is banter between myself and Saul Rubinek, who plays Artie, that's just us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can kind of roll whenever. We bicker like two people who have been working in a top secret government warehouse for 30 years, even though I'm not quite 20.
Wait, in life or on the show?
In life.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How old are you?
I'm 19. I'll be 20 in September.
I didn't know that.
Well, how old did you think I was?
Well, you're very articulate. You present yourself you look young, but you don't talk. You don't... I almost said you don't talk like a stupid teenager, but you're like...
Oh, Hardwick's a mess!
You don't, but you know what I mean? Because, you know, like, teenagers, I don't know.
Thank you.
That makes sense. Okay, that totally makes sense. That's why when Sneaker Pimps came on the other night and we were hanging out, you were like, I've never heard this song before.
Mm-hmm.
Because you were merely more than an embryo when Six Underground came out.
Sure. And now you're speaking Greek.
That's right. That's right. That's fascinating. Well, how did you get to be so smart? Were your parents in some sort of weird government fire starter like program where they had psychic powers, and then you were born with some extra mutant ability?
I wish I could say that my birth was that monumental, but it was extremely average and accidental. No, my dad's a doctor, and my mom is a hairdresser who stayed at home to raise me. Mm-hmm. My folks split when I was really young, but they were both...
Me too.
Yo, come on!
Yep, I'm tough.
Joint custody.
It's nice.
In the house.
Nice. And then in the other house, too.
Oh, yeah. I preferred to stay in one house, but that's neither here nor there. I was always really academic. I'm a Virgo, so it's... perfectionism is in my blood.
I swear to God, I thought you were about to say, I'm a virgin. I was going to be like, that is why go there at this point?
No, not going there. I'm a Virgo.
Right, right, right. that's just where I thought. You know, sometimes you project ahead where you think people are going to go with that. That's where I thought you were going to go.
Right.
I'm sorry about that.
So, on the other track.
Mm-hmm. we'll take care of this in post.
Fantastic.
We're not going to cut this out in post.
Asshole. So I mean, I was always really academic. I'm the kind of person who, when I commit to going after something, I'm going to do it until it's dead. So I got into ballet when I was 3 and did that 8 years until I had to quit to come out to Los Angeles. So school has just always been something that I applied myself to and enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. You tell me that I'm mature and articulate, and you know I've conditioned myself living in Los Angeles not to take a compliment. So
right.
So I have to kind of go, oh, thank you, that's very nice, and then catalog it and run away and go into my den of self-hatred.
I feel like I've just tried to embrace the not taking a compliment thing. So, like for instance, here, pay me a compliment. This is just what I do rather than go through the whole rigmarole anymore.
About you or about
whatever, just any kind of compliment.
That shirt is dope.
You're fucking stupid. See, that's what I like to... Because ultimately, that's, you know, when someone says...
Nice. I know people like that.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I wish I had had that much focus when I was your age. I really do. I didn't know what the fuck... I mean, I knew kind of what I wanted to do, but I didn't have any... I certainly wasn't driven like you are.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I have drive, but There's that quote that says that the coolest people still don't know what they want to do at 40.
Mm-hmm.
So for all the drive and ambition I have, my tastes do tend to vacillate as well. So like, you know, one day I'll be all about pursuing Hackslash or whatever project mm-hmm. it is. And the next day I'll pick up my guitar and play it all day long and just figure out what songs I can cover. And, you know, the next day pick up a book and go, I just want to read this.
And you play guitar too? You know what? You should be in some kind of reboot of Josie and the Pussycats where they're fucking badass.
I would love to do that.
That would be amazing.
Right now I'm campaigning for an undercover punk rock episode in season 3.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously Pete and Mike are Secret Service agents. They can't go undercover in a girl band.
Nope.
Why, you ask, would... Would Warehouse 13 need to do a girl band plot?
It's television. You can write a million different ways that could happen.
There's an artifact.
How are you guys going to make the U-turning into Bill Cosby episode happen? You're just going to sit down and write it. That's how.
It's true. That man has to have an artifact on him somehow. My pitch for next season and who knows what they'll do, but I'd love for us to have an artifact somehow associated with, you know, 1970s punk rock. So, like, the stage door of CBGB's could be the artifact. You walk in, you never come out, you're stuck in 1977.
Do you kind of wish you were in that era?
Oh, I was totally born in the wrong decade. I mean, I was born in 1990. Don't cry. And...
I'm not going to cry. How can I cry when I can't even catch my breath?
No, he's hyperventilated. And I'm kind of just now discovering all the music of the 90s. Like, I started with, like, Bob Dylan in my early teens.
Classic 90s artist.
Of course.
Yeah. When he came around in 92, I was like, this Dylan guy, he's really got something.
Oh, you got to get the really early stuff.
What?
You know... It
would be funny if you were like, yeah, so when I discovered Dylan in the 90s, I was like, wow, this Jacob Dylan's really great. Oh, you're talking about the Wallflowers. Yeah, because I asked you, you said you just bought a bunch of music the other day.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you buy?
I'm on a 90s kick. I bought Nirvana Unplugged in New York.
Fantastic album.
I bought...
This is off our first record. Most people don't know it.
I bought Holes, Pretty on the Inside, and
Courtney Loves... She's Pretty Somewhere.
God.
What?
And Holes are Courtney Loves America's Sweetheart solo album, which I hear is like unlistenable, but I can't wait. And the new Born Ruffians, because I love me some indie rock.
I'm not familiar with that band.
Born Ruffians? Well, they're Toronto natives. You should check them out.
I will.
Yeah.
Are they just indie rock?
Yeah, I don't. I think they're Paper Bag Records or something.
All right.
Something local.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, great.
I'll check it out on the World Wide Webs.
Yeah.
What other music do you like?
That's like asking a librarian what kind of books they like. I tend to like immerse myself in a certain movement.
Mm-hmm.
So I love late 70s punk rock, but I also love 80s new wave.
It's funny now that people, when you ask them what kind of music they like, it's just because people's tastes are so eclectic, they revert to telling you what kind of music they don't like.
Yeah.
Because and it just means like, well, I don't like... contemporary country music, and I'm not a fan of klezmer, but everything else,
right?
You know,
everything else. I hate that. That doesn't tell me anything. It's like, what's on your shuffle right now?
You're the iPod generation, there,
it's true.
Allison.
It's true.
Mm. I remember a time when we had to go check out reel to reels at the library. Right after I asked the librarian what book she liked, she got real mad.
And this is not a timeless podcast.
What?
At all. Like, this, a few years from now, this is going to be so 2010.
Oh, who knows if podcasting will even be a thing in a few years.
Podcasting? What's that?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what's a tape deck?
Losers.
What's this ancient relic you speak of?
Now we just do brain stabs. Well, brain stab is where you basically just shove it into your ear, and then you just absorb all the information all at once.
I'm
very
so
similar.
Afraid.
Very similar to The Matrix.
Sure.
How Neo learned Kung Fu.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm kind of frightened of the day that arrives. I'm sure it's coming.
I mean, it's interesting because it's rare that I talk to someone that has no concept of what life was like before the internet. You really don't. It was there when you were, you know, I mean, I got my first AOL account in 1994.
Wow.
So back then you were, I think, probably in your first year of college, back when you were three.
Yeah.
on your way to world domination.
Oh, one day. I was taking my Mensa exams in summer of 94.
Oh,
not true. I've
okay.
never been to Mensa.
Really?
No.
You're too fucking smart for them. You can tell. What are you going to do? So how much longer are you shooting?
We're here until the show wraps in the first week of August, but I've got a whole whack of days off this month, so I'm going to go back to LA and veg out by the pool. Because, well, there was a 2-week hiatus built into this, like, 5.5-month shooting schedule we had.
Mm-hmm.
But while everyone else took a vacation, they sent me over to Vancouver to do Eureka, because our shows are crossing over this year.
Interesting.
So, lots of fun, but no vacation for little skags. So
you're young, you got tons of energy. What do you need a vacation for?
It's true, I do have tons of energy. I'm afraid that my mind might short out pretty soon, but just lots of ginseng to help that.
Listen, you know what? You're so young, in fact, that you could short out for like 5 years. You'd still be 24 by the end of it and have fuckloads of time to complete anything you wanted to complete. You have time for you right now is it's basically just a gift basket. You can just fucking go through everything and like, ah, I'm not gonna eat these crostini, I don't need this, I'll just throw this shit out. Like, that's what time is like for you right now. It's basically just an endless basket of abundance.
Wow, that's very inspiring, and I may have to write that down. An endless basket of abundance. I think cornucopia, just, as it were. It was redundant, but that's okay.
Yeah. I like repeating the same words, redundant. And so, I enjoy.
You mean you're human?
No.
Join the club.
No. You're not human.
Trust me.
You're some kind of fembot.
Not true.
From the not-too-distant future. You're some kind of fembot from RoboCop's Detroit.
I am an android. Warehouse issue. Protocol. Punky Brewster Android.
Punky Brewster Android.
Yeah.
Listen, not to be gross, but you've just given a masturbatory fantasy to half of our listenership. If you say Punky Brewster Android.
Fantastic.
Because that's
who I am.
That's really what Small Wonder was really Punky Brewster Android.
Okay.
Did you ever see Small Wonder?
I didn't, but I remember being maybe 9, walking through a Blockbuster and seeing the cover of it and running away.
Yeah.
And picking up, like, I don't know, The Little Mermaid or something.
It was a television series.
Okay.
It was like a bad syndicated, I mean an awesome syndicated series, where this family had an effeminate son, and so the father, as a robot designer, built a female robot, I think, to try to pull the son back into heterosexuality. I mean, I'm adding a lot of this subtext.
This was a series?
I'm adding a lot of the subtext in. Really, it was just a family who built a little girl robot, but I added a bunch of that stuff in.
For their son to play with.
That's right, but he still didn't know what to do. And in the end, she worked him hard the final episode. Yeah. And then the show was canceled. But
tragedy. What a loss for pop culture. Were there any Small Wonder lunchboxes?
There must have been Small Wonder lunchboxes.
Okay. That's my next eBay purchase.
Small Wonder lunchbox?
I think I need a Small Wonder lunchbox.
I'm sure there's one out there. I'm sure someone will send you one. Someone will bring you a Small Wonder lunchbox when you're at San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, man. Comic-Con.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I'm a little bit terrified.
You must have been.
I went last year, but it was a totally different experience because I hadn't joined the cast yet. I mean, I was. We had been shooting, but my first episode hadn't aired. We screened it there, so I was able to like walk around on the floor and buy stuff from my nerd friends and have a normal person at Comic-Con experience. Now that our show has become the number one on Sci-Fi, and we have. Like, we had a 13% rise in viewership.
That was success knocking.
Yeah.
Are you going to answer?
I don't know that I'll be able to walk around the floor without some kind of disguise. My pitch for a disguise was, I mean, last year, every girl I saw was in a Slave Leia costume.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think, correct me if I'm wrong, if I do the Slave Leia thing, I can maybe get out on the floor on Friday afternoon, like 4 o'clock.
I would say...
And not be pestered, is
if you
opinion.
If you walk through... If you, Allison, walk through San Diego Contrast of Slave Leia, you'll be lucky if you're not pregnant by the time you get to the other side of the floor. So I may not suggest that.
Fair enough.
You just go in put on a radiation suit.
Got it.
Put on a radiation suit.
Full on hazmat.
Yeah. Put on a hazmat suit from Back to the Future, Marty. You know, like, yeah. You need to cover up as much as possible if you want to get through that floor.
Fair enough.
Because there's because Comic-Con, the nerds are like zombies, and once one of them recognizes you, there's this sort of like weird collective conscious thing that happens, and then you'll just see other heads start to swivel and turn, and then they'll descend upon you.
They're all on the same mental network, aren't they?
Yeah.
So they when one guy starts to get the pit sweat, they all start with the pit sweat.
I love it. I think it's so much fun. I mean, there's a certain point when you're kind of being like jammed in between people.
Sure, crowds aren't fun, but I love Comic-Con too.
Crowds are not fun, but for the most part, most of the people at Comic-Con are so nice and sweet, and they're like. A lot of them are damaged inside like we are, so everyone's first reaction is just to apologize. Like, oh my god, I'm sorry.
I know. I'm so surprised whenever someone at a convention comes up and says, I'm sorry. What are you talking about? I'm here for you. Did you like the show? What's your favorite episode? I love it. I think it's adorable and so healthy.
Are you doing a signing, or what are you doing at Comic-Con?
I'm not doing a signing this year. What I am doing is, after the Warehouse 13 panel, I'll be moderating the Eureka panel.
Oh, that's awesome.
Neil from Eureka will be moderating ours, and then I'll I'll turn right around and throw questions at them. And I've never moderated anything before.
I can give you tons of advice about moderating.
Teach me, Hardwick. I need pointers. I watched Josh Gates do it last year, luckily, because otherwise I'd have no idea. But yeah, it's going to be a big room. It's going to be a very big room this year, and I'm already getting all, like...
Do you ever do any live performance stuff?
Not in a really long time.
You're 19.
I'm sorry.
Not since I played a sunflower in...
Yeah, no, my last staged reading was when I was 14 at the Actors Gang. Reading a short one-act called Tree Fall.
Wow.
Post-apocalyptic... Never mind.
Where did you... Wait, did we cover this? Where did you grow up?
I was born in Northern California, and... Right before I turned 5, my family moved to the New Orleans area.
Mm-hmm.
And the second I got there and felt the humidity and got bitten by my first mosquito and welled up, I said, I don't want to ever have an accent like this. So I don't...
A common 5-year-old thought.
Thinking back, I kind of surprised myself. I don't know how I didn't acquire... the drawl, because it's so easy to do when you're down there, just sort of get sloppy with your speech.
I know, I grew up in Tennessee, and I lived in Arkansas, and it is infectious.
Right, and you don't have an accent, but when you go back, I'm sure you start to hear yourself, like...
When I'm performing, I notice it, and I think it's a weird... When I perform in the South, I notice it, and I think it comes out.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's just a weird subconscious thing that I want to connect with people more. Like, it's not anything that I do on purpose,
yeah.
But I notice when I start talking, I'll get a little bit of it back, and I'll say y'all, and I don't ever say that. So it's sort of a weird thing that happens. That is amazing that at 5, you had that thought. Most Southern 5-year-olds are just, like, shoving mayonnaise in their gaping maw.
Yeah. Snow cones in the summertime, fried chicken, crawfish pie. Horrible, horrible food. So unhealthy for young people.
But what are you talking about? We're in Toronto where they have fucking poutine.
Yes, but there are also...
just a fat casserole.
A number of vegan restaurants. And other sceney, bougie places that offer gluten-free options.
Boy, the South, they try so hard. You know, you order a chicken salad in the South and you get fucking wilted lettuce and fried chicken and ranch dressing and bacon bits. Like, they can't help it.
No.
They just can't help it.
Have you ever been asked if you want your sandwich dressed?
No.
Fascinating. When we moved down there, my mom had no idea what she was being asked when we ordered, like, a po' boy or something.
Mm-hmm.
You want that dressed? She's like, excuse me? Dressed? You know, dressed. Mom was like, no, what is dress? You put a jacket on it?
Right.
How are you going to dress my sandwich?
We put tiny jackets on sandwiches in the South.
Mayonnaise, lettuce, tomato. That's a dressed sandwich. Yeah. Other funny word, fixin'.
Oh yeah, I'm fixing to do this. I'm
making groceries instead of shopping for groceries and making groceries.
That I haven't heard. That might be a New Orleans thing. No, fixing is a big one. And I'm fascinated by the versatility of y'all. The word y'all.
It can be plural. It can be.
Yeah. Well, it can also, like, you can say. You know, you can say, "Hey, y'all, want to meet up later?" Or you can, if you're angry at people, you can be like, "Y'all."
Oh, yeah.
Or if you're sort of like, if there's a kind of a wounded version where you want people to stop fucking with you, where you're like,
y'all.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very, that word carries a lot of weight in the South.
Sure. Where in the Valley, in California, you just go, you guys.
Guys. Come on, you guys.
You guys.
Why are we going to the MGMT concert, guys? Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I was in the South until I was 11, and discovering my penchant for performing down there really sort of kept me afloat. It was culture shock. I mean, in Monterey, I was used to, like, being trundled.
Monterey.
Yeah. Well, that's where I'm really from. I don't really identify with the South. My dad still lives there, but, like, my family is all up in... Northern California, and I kind of came out of the womb looking for sushi. Don't even go there.
But you,
no,
please,
no.
So
really used to, you know, all the culture.
I better get a Band-Aid for my tongue. I just had to bite through it. I love your... By the way, your aquarium in Monterey is astonishing.
It's the bomb dig, right?
I got a... I don't know what that means. I got a... I bought a t-shirt near the Monterey Bay Aquarium. The nerdiest t-shirt I've ever bought was... I don't even know if this is nerdy. This is just sad. It was an otter shirt. It had an otter on it.
Awesome.
But it was... It said it was Harry Otter. H-A-I-R-Y. Harry Otter. And it was just this otter with these glasses and a lightning scar on his forehead.
That's like big dog level nerdy.
I don't... Well, it's pretty bad. But I did buy it. And it was one of those purchases that I never... Every time I'd pull it out, I'd be like, today's the day, Harry Otter. Not feeling it.
Several... Like, a few decades from now, that shirt will be awesome. When, like, Harry Potter is a thing of, you know, early part of the century.
Yeah.
And ironic t-shirts are still in, because when will vintage ironic t-shirts ever go out?
Right.
I hope never, for my sake.
Right. Yeah, when Daniel Radcliffe starts looking like Mel Smith, or you don't know who that is. He's a British actor.
Awesome.
And he's not in good shape.
Okay.
He's a portly. He's a fine, hilarious yet portly gentleman.
When Daniel Radcliffe is old enough to play Dumbledore.
Yes.
That's when that shirt will be cool.
That's fantastic. I wonder if they'll ever. You think they'll reboot Harry Potter in like 20 years?
I hope not. Leave it alone.
They're already rebooting fucking Spider-Man. Why wouldn't they?
I know. Well, they're rebooting Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, and it's less than. I mean. That movie, the American movie's in the works, and the second installment is just now coming out. The second Swedish installment.
Man, so. I don't waste any time. It's that you know the companies are just so scrambling to get people's attention, so they're just going for the heaviest branded entertainment they can find, even if that means like we're just gonna remake this title over and over and over again.
I'll bet we'll have one day 5 versions of the same movie being made at the same time.
That would be amazing. What do you want? Do you want to do anything besides? Do you want to? I'm sure you must write. You must want to write a book at some point, or you must want to write a screenplay or something.
I want to do it all. It's when I'm on set, I tend to pay a lot of attention to the camera operators and the DP, because I'm fascinated with, you know, how lighting a scene can change the entire tone of it. And we shoot with red cameras, which are, I mean. When they malfunction, which is often, we call it a red moment. But shooting on a hard drive means you can just shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot because there's sort of endless storage and it's not nearly as expensive as film to acquire or to turn around.
Back in my day, film was what we used in cameras, and it was in limited supply.
Indeed.
And you could only get like a take. Yeah. You'd be like, well, we're out of film now.
Yeah. Back when you actually rehearsed.
Yeah, but you kids now, I mean, you just have everything in ones and zeros.
It's true. But yeah, I want to learn how to do everything. I want to get to the point where I can, you know, where if I find a book or a short story or something that I think would be a great vehicle for me, I want to develop it. Like, I want to either adapt it or produce it or get to the point where I'm directing at some point. I've befriended the camera department enough that I think they'll let me operate a camera on second unit in season 3. Maybe.
Really?
Maybe.
That's pretty snazzy.
I'm hoping.
This is fascinating. So what's your... Do you have a Courtney Love written plan down somewhere? Like, I'm so fascinated to know what your process is.
God. I try to stay busy as much as possible. I don't have the Courtney Love timeline,
mm-hmm.
Which is maybe what scares me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of insatiable when it comes to working, when it comes to creating.
Well, the other thing about Courtney Love's timeline is that when you read farther, it actually says fall into a disgusting horror volcano. So it's amazing that she actually is making that part happen as well.
Yeah.
She's really... That's ambition. That is nothing but ambition.
Definition of Machiavellian tendencies.
I think a lot of people would benefit from from however it is that you're able to do. I stay busy all the time. I'm not 100% sure that's a good thing. I always feel like it's because I'm running from something, but I don't know what that is.
Oh, me too. But that's the artist's curse, right? It's like, I am the piece of shit at the center of the universe. You are the piece of shit at the center of your universe. Something is going to go wrong if we're not constantly creating something.
No, I know you did, you do yoga.
Yes.
You said vinyasa?
Vinyasa, indeed.
Is that the like 110 degree?
Hells to the no. Look at me. I weigh about 2 pounds. I have a feeling that if I tried to invert myself and then stand up in a 95 degree room, I'd fall over and pass out.
Okay.
No, I have not tried hot yoga because I'm afraid of it. And I also don't like to sweat.
Yeah.
But in this humidity, it's kind of hard not to.
So I think part of the reason why we stay really busy is because maybe we don't want to be left alone with our thoughts.
Yes.
I mean, like, we just don't want the...
Such bad news.
Because if you're focusing on external things so much, you can keep the forces from turning inward.
The voices don't talk to me when I'm playing a character.
No, that's her talking. That's the character talking. It's not me.
And then if I'm not practicing guitar, I hear the voices. I don't want to hear the voices.
So how's yoga been for you?
It's been great. It's I'm pretty flexible, so that's right. The easy part.
Yeah.
What was that?
Nothing. What are you talking about?
Like a few classes back, I surprised myself and like sprang up into the air with my toe hooked in my hand, and I was like, standing side split, whatever the hell it's called. I did not know I could do that. But it's not easy. Like, I think, having done ballet for 8 years, my balance is pretty good. I'm pretty flexible. But you try holding the airplane pose for a minute and a half or a shoulder stand for 2 minutes.
No, I've done yoga before. It is hard because there's a certain, I mean, your body, your muscles have to function to keep you in that position.
Yeah.
And it fucking hurts.
Yes.
After a while.
It burns.
And it hurts a lot more when you're not na-na-na-na 19. It hurts a lot more when you get a little older. I'm 22.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I'm doing it now. So that when I get to the ripe old age of 22, I'm not limping over to Starbucks.
I gotta tell you something. I think you're gonna be all right, Allison. I think you're gonna be A-okay.
I try really hard. I just try.
Listen, it's not great now, but it's gonna get better. Like, what did that mean?
Yeah.
Do you do that thing where do you hyperanalyze everything?
Oh, of course.
This person said this, so I said this, so that must mean... Do you do apology texts afterwards where you write and go, well, remember how I said that thing, and I didn't mean that thing, and I hope that didn't offend you, and the other person is like, well, I'm too busy thinking about myself. I didn't know what you were... I don't remember what you were talking about.
I don't do the apology text because I'm so terrified of seeming uncool, which I realize is really uncool. But, yes, I do this super analyzing thing, and the perfect example of that was when we were back on season 2. It was the first episode. It was, like, the first scene that Saul and I were shooting back from the hiatus, and it was just sort of sentimental scene where he really connects with me, like, as a father figure, and I get a little emotional. It's a cute scene. And afterwards, he said, it's like falling off a log, isn't it? And I kind of half-smiled, and I went, what does that mean? Falling off a log, that's painful, that's mindless. There's nothing positive about falling off a log. And I think he saw the sort of bafflement and sadness on my face. He went, that's a good thing, Allison. Falling off a log is easy. Mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. easy.
Yeah.
I went, oh, sorry. I'd never heard that expression. You've never heard falling off a log? I'm 19, Saul. Oh, go do your yoga.
Boy, you just reminded me of it. You just reminded me of an amazing story that I saw 2 Christmases ago. I was at a Christmas party, and... This isn't me just talking to myself. This ties into what you just said.
Okay.
I was at a Christmas party, and there was, like, a 3-year-old at the party. And it was at this guy's place who was a trainer, so he had some exercise equipment out. And there was a medicine ball. And so the little boy, the 3-year-old boy, went to pick up this medicine ball. And he went to hoist it up, but, of course, it's a medicine ball, so it's very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And in that child's mind... balls are not heavy.
No.
They're light, and you can throw and play with them. And so when he went to pick it up and it was heavy, it fucking blew his mind wide open. Like, he just started screaming at it. And the moment where you could see that in this human being's life, the periphery of his worldview
was an epistemic shift.
Yeah, it was. Just in that simple moment of, like, realizing that not all balls are heavy, he just learned, like, a universal truth. And it was the most amazing thing. I've laughed, of course, but...
The
bubble was burst. God damn it, balls are sometimes heavy.
When he gets a little older, His balls will be heavy.
And that's preparing us for that day.
Indeed.
They used to be buoyant. Now I have to Velcro them.
What are we talking about now?
I don't know. What are you talking about? That's amazing. So what are you going to do once you're done with Warehouse 13?
Post Warehouse 13. I'm going to hit the pavement again. I'm moving to New York in the fall because I'm ready for a change in metropolis.
Yeah.
I've been in LA.
Toronto's not dirty enough for you.
Toronto's not dirty enough, and LA is too car centric. You know, I want to be in a city where I can hop on a subway, like Toronto, only bigger.
You can hop on a subway in Los Angeles, but it really just takes you downtown and no one goes there.
And you know what? I did that recently as an aside. I did that the last time I was in LA. My friend Phil's movie premiered at the LA Film Festival, and you know, it was silly to drive all the way down there and fight traffic when I could just take the subway. And on the way back, I'd gotten on the wrong train, so I had to go back and change. And as I'm waiting to get onto the right train, there's this guy who just looked like a dirty hippie from Venice. Like, really attractive dude, though.
Was it Sean Penn?
You know, it's funny. He looked like he would have sounded like Sean Penn's character in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Okay.
He was, like, very airy and much like yourself.
Oh, yes.
He was all, like, just tan and blue-eyed and blonde and gorgeous, like, these dirty dreads.
Like myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Minus the dreads.
All right, Foxy. So I got on the train, and he swooped right in after me with his personal grocery cart with a comforter in it. And I just kind of sat there, and, like, I'm in a short dress, feeling uncomfortable. And the voice that came out of him was so wrong for this individual. He said, "Let me ask you a question, my friend. Have you ever smoked crack?" And I just looked at him for long enough to grasp that that was the sound that this face made.
Yeah.
And said, no. And he nodded.
It's and easier then, than falling off a log.
And then he opened his mouth again and said, "Let me ask you a question, my friend. Have you ever smoked crack?" I looked at him again and I said, "No." And then he did it a third time.
I know you love redundancy, so we've already covered that.
He did it a third time, and I kept, like, the only reason I kept sitting there was because I thought that each time he'd ask me a different drug. Like, maybe he'd say smack, or maybe he'd say dope. But he didn't. He said crack all three times, and the third time I just looked at him and smiled. And he smiled back, and I thought, there's a person in there. I can see Jeff Spicoli or whoever you are. And then the train stopped, and I went, oh, I have to change trains. And I got out, and I got into a different car, because I was not sure of where that was heading.
See, I would avoid crack just for the squeaky voice side effect.
Yeah.
Maybe he thought crack was like Bloody Mary. Like, if you say it three times, it just appears.
Yeah.
And then you get to take crack.
Right. I mean, I don't know where he thought I had it. My dress was it was tight-fitting and short. There was no place to put my crack pipe.
There's no... Well...
I guess there was one place.
I mean...
But that's not sanitary.
You really want to be...
No, I don't carry it there.
Have you ever... When I was just out of college, I was going to go to this party, and this girl... I was talking to this girl, and she was like, yeah... And she mentioned there was going to be crack at the party, but it was so casually thrown into everything else, she might as well have said, you know, corn chips. But she was like, yeah, it's going to be a fun party, you know. There's going to be like, you know, there's going to be like vodka and beer. There's going to be some pot, crack, wine. It was like, what?
Really blasé.
What? Yeah, really. Just like, really just threw it in with everything else.
It reminds me of Boogie Nights when that tiny, tiny little anorexic thing gets out of the limo with...
Oh, yeah.
And she's, pardon me, do you have any Coke at this party? And Burt Reynolds is like, oh, it's no bigger than a minute, are you? Shy as a butterfly. Oh, I love Boogie Nights.
It's a good movie.
Yeah. Anyway, so after Warehouse 13, I'm going to move to New York and hit the pavement there.
That's nice. But I do want to say one thing about downtown LA. Which is, a lot of people don't go there, but it is a very cool part of Los Angeles. There's actually a tremendous amount of culture there.
Sure. Lots of museums, lots of crackheads.
What were you doing when you were going down there?
My friend Phil Flores just premiered his movie The Wheeler Boys at the Los Angeles Film Festival, and it was awesome.
Yeah?
Really, really proud of my friend. I've known him for several years. I met him when he was in and he was going to USC for film, and he got this movie made by way of a contest sponsored by Film Independent and Netflix, and went through this whole rigmarole to get it. I mean, like, submitted his screenplay that he'd adapted from a short story, and produced a trailer for consideration with 9 other trailers, and his one, and his movie is spectacular.
Is it available anywhere?
I believe you can stream it on Netflix, although I may be wrong. But I think they're making the festival rounds right now. But yeah, there you go, Phil. I just promoted your movie again, and where is my name on the special thanks? Nowhere.
What an ungrateful fuck.
Phil.
What a piece of human feces.
For all the concerts I've taken you to. God.
She's known you for years, like after she wrote her second screenplay at 9, Phil. And it's like, you know, this friendship is just not really.
When I was still in high school, like 2 weeks
out.
Ago.
Yeah, exactly. That's amazing. Did you go to regular high school? Did you go to actor school?
I went to actor school. It was actually started for the academically at risk, but it was independent study.
Academically at risk? Like, yeah. you're gonna hurt academics in some way?
Well, you know.
We don't want to let them too near academics.
Truants and juvenile delinquents and whatnot. So I did independent study through high school so I could audition and work. And so, yeah. And then community college after that. And that's still, you know.
Now, I'm assuming you've seen. I feel like what I want to do is just list. You're because you seem older than you are. I almost feel like you've been frozen in a time, like in some sort of stasis, like some kind of, you know, like you just woke up from a coma or something, and you missed the 80s and you missed all these great movies. So I feel like I want to give you a list of, like, you got to see this, 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 and this, and this, and this, and see what you've already seen.
Oh,
did you see Some Kind of Wonderful? Because
No. You
should have been in that movie.
Oh, really?
You would have been the Mary Stuart Masterson character.
Fantastic. I should probably get out my moleskin and start writing down all these amazing, amazing tips.
Moleskin at 19. Adorable. Yeah, Some Kind of Wonderful is fantastic. She's a drummer.
Okay.
She's a fucking drummer.
Well, I don't know how to play the drums yet.
Give me 2 weeks.
But I'm sure it's coming. Okay, this is Hardwick's.
She's really writing this down.
Skageducation.
Skagication.
Oof.
I've been calling.
Like an inflammation.
I've been. There's some slight skagulation, but we're gonna lance that and give you some topical, and you'll be all right.
All right. So Some Kind of Wonderful. What else?
Some Kind of Wonderful. I mean, have you seen the classic dude comedies, the Caddyshacks of the world?
I saw Caddyshack years ago, but
you can't say years ago. That means
it's true. In my early teens was years ago.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Now I gotta think of some really great 80s flicks. Did you ever see Tapeheads?
No.
John Cusack?
Tapeheads. I'm bullet pointing all of these, by the way. I'll make a spreadsheet when I get home.
Yeah, Tapeheads is really great. Let's see. What else is really awesome from the 80s? Raising Arizona.
Raising Arizona.
You haven't seen that?
No.
It'll literally be your favorite new. It'll be your new favorite movie. It's the Coen Brothers.
I love the Coen Brothers.
It was, you know, like if you watch Blood Simple or any of their earlier stuff, like I feel like Raising Arizona was the first kind of movie where you watched them kind of spread their wings and just fuck shit up. That movie was so amazing.
Nice.
This is so much fun. Yeah. I wasn't prepared to think of a list.
Okay.
Why don't we start you there?
All right. Very good. That's 3 is good.
That's 5 to 6 hours of entertainment
I will take my list to Queen Video later this afternoon. And
anyone who's listening can follow Allison Skag with 2 L's on Twitter, and you can just give her recommendations. I'm gonna write you a comprehensive list of stuff that you should see.
I'm glad, so I get something out of this deal.
Yeah, exactly. The fuck is that supposed to mean? You know, you invite a 19-year-old girl up to your hotel room under the auspice of recording something, and this is the shit you get. I wish I had any of these movies here. I don't even think I can stream. You know, you can't stream movies in the hotel. The wireless internet's not that good.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's unacceptable.
It's a combination of them not having a robust network and then a bunch of people tugging on it at the same time. I could bore you to tears.
Well, as someone who does not remember a reality without the internet, I don't appreciate it.
You don't appreciate the internet?
I don't appreciate the lack of robustness in hotel Wi-Fi.
I'm surprised, actually, that there that I mean, like, just setting up better networks everywhere. I mean, I would have thought by 2010 there would just be
global Wi-Fi, right?
Public networks,
and we all have brain cancer.
Well, there's no. They haven't made that link.
Not yet.
When you go to medical school and get your degree, then you can prove that.
Yes.
So what are you going to do when you're in New York?
Everything. Everything New York has to offer.
Except for the bars, because you're 19.
I know. Can you believe it? Drinking age in Canada is 19.
Oh, yeah?
And in the States, it's 21. It's hilarious. I'm not much of a drinker. I'm not a drinker. What did I just say?
No.
Anyway.
Listen, no one listening ever drank before they were 21 in the States.
At all.
Mm-mm.
I really, really like concerts. So I'll go to as many concerts as New York has to offer. And I love going to UCB in LA, so I'll probably hit up UCB in New York.
You'll love it. It's like a whole... The UCB in New York is like uncovering a whole different world. Because, you know, you get very used to, oh, these are the performers here in LA, and you love them. And then you go there, and it's like... It's like, you know, like jumping into a different pool that's you know,
well, you had Matt Walsh on your podcast, right?
Yeah.
Dude is hilarious.
Matt's phenomenal.
Just saw him in Cyrus.
Matt's great, and Ian, and Besser, and you know, all those UCB originals.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all phenomenal.
We had Paul Rust on Drake and Josh for like a two-liner. I couldn't believe it. Like, he's... hilarious. And isn't he writing the new Pee-wee?
He is co-writing the new Pee-wee Herman movie.
I cannot imagine a better fit for the new Pee-wee.
I'm so excited. When I saw that, I tweeted it, and then Pee-wee retweeted my tweet.
You were retweeted by Pee-wee?
Yeah.
This is historic.
It is. I think he's following me. Right now. Don't turn around. No, I'm such a... That is one of the most amazing things to me about Twitter, is actually being able to hook up with... I mean, you know, in a sense, hooking up with people that you idolized when you were younger. And I love that Pee-wee... I love that he's doing stuff again.
I'm still trying to get Joan Jett to follow me. Can't get her attention on the Twitter, though. I don't think it's really her.
You don't think so?
No.
Fuck. I feel like she... Oh, yeah, I don't know. It's tough. Were you bummed that you should have been in that movie?
Yes, I should have.
Did you audition for it?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
Is this a heartbreaking story?
I worked with Joan. The first movie I did was a National Lampoon movie that she was in.
Now she really should be following you.
Yeah. Yes, she should. But that's okay. So hopefully I'll find her in New York and befriend her.
Hey, it's me. Why the fuck aren't you following me? And you punch her in the face, and she'll just kind of like take the punch and wipe the blood off and be like, you're all right, kid.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna follow you on Twitter.
Let's make out.
Yeah.
and then play some nasty rock and roll.
Would you make out with Joan Jett?
Are you asking me seriously?
I think so.
I don't know. I would have to... I'm a classy girl. I'm not the kind of person that would just, like, make out with someone.
Make out with any
status.
Old Joan Jett.
If she and I had chemistry, maybe.
That's a good answer.
I've never made out with a girl before. I'm not afraid to admit that. I've never made out with a girl.
You're not like Katy Perry?
I'm not like Katy Perry.
I'm not like Katy Perry.
So I don't listen to
California. She is a treasure. She is a national treasure.
Oh, but she's so hot and cold, that California girl.
She is so... up in the air. You never know where you stand with Katie.
I don't listen to Top 40. I don't listen to country. But sometimes I listen to gangster rap.
I'll tell you what you would like is you would like 70s country. You would love 70s country and earlier.
Yeah. Well, I love Johnny Cash. So like that whole world I'm down with.
Yeah. But you'd love like old Hank Williams, I think.
Yes.
Not really knowing you that well, I'm going to tell you that you would love old Hank Williams.
Certainly.
You would love, like, Ray Price and, you know, getting into the 70s, like, when Waylon Jennings, there was a weird kind of funk influence that hit country, and it got a little really dirty and greasy in the 70s.
Nice.
So I think, I'm gonna have to just fill your brain with a bunch of just weird media.
Yes, please do.
I will.
Please do. I am a pop culture hound. I should fill your brain with what's to come in season 2 of Warehouse 13, I think.
Will you please?
Yes, please. Tell me first where you're going, when this is going to land on the World Wide Web.
I will I'll probably put it up. I want to put it up before Comic-Con, because okay, we cool. talked about you about to be at Comic-Con.
Right on.
So it'll be up sometime in the next couple weeks.
Nice. So people will have already seen episode Mild Mannered, our superhero episode.
When does that air?
It's this Tuesday.
Okay, yeah.
We've got... The cool thing about season two is that it's an edgier, sexier version of what we were last year. Mm-hmm. We have such phenomenal writers that populate the writer's room. And of course, Jack Kenny, who keeps the ship running smoothly. So we know what works. We know what we can do within the mythology of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But we've still managed to mix it up every week because every episode is different. We've got like a fashion show episode coming up. We've got there's an episode where my character goes out in the field with Micah, which is brand new. And so we get to see my character sort of struggling with, you know, what am I? Am I a hacker? Do I want to be a Secret Service agent? Like, I know I want to be part of the warehouse.
That's what's fun when a show like really gets room to develop. You know, like if you ever watch Buffy, you know, like you get to see the third season is much different from the first season because they can kind of like expand it. You know, and they can do a musical episode, and they can or like on Angel they did a puppet episode, which was really super awesome.
Exactly. So one day we'll get to puppets in a musical, but just yet we've really settled into our characters and know who these people are. It's cool. Saul does not have to act at all. All he does when he becomes Artie, he takes his eyebrows and he pushes them up into the middle of his forehead, because he's let them grow that long. Grabs the massive steel wool that is his hair, pulls that up, and puts on his glasses, and there's Artie.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. It changes everything.
So what's gonna happen in season two?
Fargo from Eureka comes to visit the warehouse.
Interesting.
And sparks fly between Fargo and Claudia.
Uh-oh.
But the problem is that Claudia's already met Todd, mysterious young lad who lives in Unaville, the town that houses the warehouse.
Now, is he a vampire or a werewolf?
Neither.
Oh, well, I'm not interested in it. I only like teen dramas with vampires and werewolves.
I'll show myself the door.
Wait a minute.
my good friend Nolan Funk. I kind of got everything that I wanted this season.
Mm-hmm.
I lobbied for a Eureka crossover, boys to make out with, and at least a couple scenes where I wield a weapon. I got all of that.
Well, you should lobby for Joan Jett.
I should lobby for Joan Jett. Oh man, I should lobby for a lot of things.
Should
be a lobbyist.
Are you someone who, like, when you get stuff? Is it more about the process of wanting stuff for you, or when you get it, are you genuinely like, oh, I can relax for a second because I did get that thing I wanted?
No. As soon as I get the job or I have something coming up, mm-hmm. I have performance anxiety. Like, oh god, I'm so excited to do this now. Oh, I hope I don't choke.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I had nightmares over the hiatus between season one and season two, where I'd be on set, the cameras were rolling, they slated the scene, yelled action, and I went, I don't know my lines. Oh my god, I have no idea what this scene is. I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know where I am. I'm sorry, I have to stop. And that was like the most... I had it like four times over the course of the hiatus. So...
But that never happened.
No, that never happens. Because I'm compulsive about being prepared.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Man, I knew a lot of actor kids when I was growing up. And they all just didn't seem to give a shit about anything. But that's probably a bad example because now they're all really famous. So, listen, your way is going to work as well, though.
Hopefully.
That's my point.
Yeah. So season two, yeah, we've got this crossover, and the crossovers are great. Fargo's reason for being at the warehouse is to update the computer system, which, of course, has to go awry. Long-distance relationships will never work. Fargo's West Coast, Claudia's East Coast, world traveler.
Yeah, but the internet. The internet, baby.
Webcam.
FaceTime!
I can't hold a webcam.
You can, it's just weird.
It's really weird.
Yeah.
What else? I don't want to give you any spoilers, but there's so much cool stuff. I listened to a little bit of your Ozzy podcast.
Oh, you did?
Ozzy Osbourne's amp is an artifact. We have it in the warehouse. Along with Jimi Hendrix's guitar, a time machine of sorts.
What?
That might be a super spoiler, but if that's all I tell you, that's all.
Wait.
It's fine.
Oh my god, my mind is racing.
Okay. Well, there you go. Chew on that for a while.
I will.
What else do we have? We have Man Ray's camera.
Oh, that's awesome. Do they have to get permission from these people before they, like, do they go to the estate of Jimi Hendrix and be like, hey, we want to say that this is guitar. Is that okay? Or can you just do that?
That's, I think that's public domain.
Okay.
I think we try to select things that are pretty accessible and not too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, last year we had Edgar Allan Poe's pen and notebook, which is my favorite, because anything that you write with that pen manifests.
Uh-huh.
So my go-to line for that is, if I had this pen, I would write my multi-million dollar movie contract, and then it would just happen, and I wouldn't have to be as OCD as I am.
That's right. You know the way you'd get it, and then you'd still be OCD.
Sure. Yeah. The slippery slope with that is, I want more Edgar Allan Poe pens, and then there'd be...
I wish for infinite wishes.
Yes. Yep. Oh, no.
You always wish for infinite wishes. That's what you're supposed to wish for.
It's true.
Do you think you're going to have Chris Hardwick's singled out gas station hosting shirt? Singled Out was a show on in the mid-90s when you were very young.
Indeed.
And I wore sometimes a lot of gas station shirts, as men would do, as young men would do in the mid-90s.
Proud of you. I'm sure it's a relic, and I'm sure that it's been imbued with your...
Snark.
With your snark.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the snark section. I'm sure there's got to be like a stand-up comedy section in the warehouse. It's endless. I feel like the warehouse is a small version of the universe that we live in, and mm-hmm. it's just the floor plan is constantly expanding. It's underground, so who knows how far it could go. There are vaults and sectors that we discover in every episode that I didn't know about. So there's kind of endless possibilities with that show.
Well, I am thrilled that you agreed to come do this podcast. It's been, and we have to give a shout out to our mutual friend JP Manu.
Word up, JP, for getting us together up here in Toronto.
Yes, yes, so nice, so nice. I've known JP forever. He was on your show as well.
I met JP when I was 13 on my third pilot. I just realized after we've been talking for an hour that this podcast is going to make me sound like such an overachieving douchebag.
No,
but that's okay because I am an overachieving douchebag.
It's not at all. Listen, you know, there's a difference between someone who says a lot of stuff because they're trying to sound cool, and you can tell when it's actually an organic part of someone's personality.
Yeah,
and I think the douchebagginess just comes in when the poser thing is added, which is not you. So I don't think it comes off douchey at all. I think it's impressive. It makes me jealous.
Oh yeah,
it makes me jealous that when I was 19, I was in college and not, you know, like I was like, I really want to do comedy, but I'm afraid to do comedy. And you
college
know.
Is admirable. I fully support getting your education.
Yeah. I mean, it's admirable, but it is. And it is, of course. But, you know, I mean, you can educate yourself in very specific ways now that we have the internet and all information available at any given second, you know. I was in a fraternity for like a semester.
Ooh!
I got out though.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm so.
I didn't rape anyone, you know. So that was good.
And how lucky for me!
You weren't even born yet.
No, it's true. I was merely an inkling.
That's right.
I wasn't even an inkling.
Nope.
In my mother's mind.
Nope. You were just. It could have been your dad came home after a hard. You ever think about how you were conceived? Like no one ever thinks about like.
I try really hard not to think about how I was conceived.
You don't know if it was just like a let's just get this over with, or hey, we're in the car and it's sexy, or just like it's sex night. Like you don't even know. You don't even know what the circumstances were surrounding the conception.
I do, though. That's the sad thing.
You do?
I do.
You know, I've just realized we have a little bit more time in the podcast.
No! I feel like my dad had been away for a while, and it was like winter. You know? Come here, keep me warm.
Winter of 1989.
Yeah, it's true. Anyway, so that's why I was born in September.
Fantastic. Well, it has been such a pleasure to have you on the podcast, and I hope you had fun.
I did. This was the most, like, random stream of consciousness interview I've ever done, and I'm really glad.
That's all it is.
Normally it's like, what can you tell us about season two?
Oh.
What can we expect out of your character? Which is really great, but, like, having to repeat the same sort of sound bites over and over gets really old. So, yay, Nerdist randomness!
Do you have just do you just have, like, three or four, just regular answers to throw at me?
Yeah. The sexy, edgy show, mixing it up every week. struggle between girlhood and womanhood for Claudia. I got everything I wanted. Those are all bullet pointed in my Moleskin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm serious.
That's fantastic. Well, oh, and you've got the flip up Moleskin too.
Yeah, I'm trying something new.
That's good. How is it? Is it interfering with your OCD?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. I filled up a journal style one, and I really liked it, but this was sort of more conducive to the back pocket.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Excellent. Well, I'll see you. I mean, you know, we'll see you at Comic-Con.
Yes, indeed.
And other people can see you doing the Eureka panel at Comic-Con. They can also watch Warehouse 13.
Tuesday nights only on Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi!
Imagine greater. This is why I've become the mayor of that channel. Okay, I've done Destination Truth, I've done Eureka. I'm gonna nominate a panel.
I'll tell you why it's smart, because it means that you could, like, they'll consider you to, like, pitch the next show. Like, I should
get around to writing a pilot. What is taking me so long?
You are really fucking up this opportunity.
Ugh.
Let's write it right now. I'm going to turn off this podcast, and we're going to start writing right
Why
now.
Why are we wasting time podcasting? Let's do something productive.
Here we go. Fade in.
Later.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
Girls Fight Back is the world-renowned personal safety and empowerment-based self-defense company that teaches women and people of all gender identities how to live confidently while being their own best protector. As a leading voice on violence prevention and empowerment for over 20 years, Girls Fight Back has trained over 1 million people around the world since 2001.
Their engaging workshops create a safe environment for groups to learn evidence-backed, life-saving skills, emphasizing that self-defense education is about more than just physical resistance. Girls Fight Back, led by CEO Nicole Snell, provides audiences with a range of applicable safety strategies that can be used in any setting so that you can lead a badass life.
To learn more about Girls Fight Back and to bring their award-winning trainings and seminars to your community, visit girlsfightback.com. That's girlsfightback.com.